It is Super Bowl week, and the San Francisco 49ers and Kansas City Chiefs are getting ready to play a pretty big game. The Tennessee Titans, like every other team in the NFL that's not San Francisco and Kansas City, getting on with their off-season business. In the case of the Titans, they have officially announced the hiring of their offensive and defensive coordinators. There have been reports of other coaches hired, and for the second straight week, reports of a coach with direct connection to Denard Walker will be a part of the staff. Which so we will get more valuable insight, firsthand insight this week on this week in Believe in Titans with former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, welcome in.
What's going on this evening, David?
Not a whole lot. John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, welcome in.
Oh, thank you. Good to be with you guys.
And I am David Beauclair. And before we get into the Titans, I mean, we can't ignore the fact that it is Super Bowl week. Media Day has come and gone. There's Taylor Swift questions that will continue throughout the week. Denard, we won't ask you to bring up, you know, to revisit the game. We know you've been brutally honest about how things went there numerous times. But Media Day, was that fun? Was that torturous? What was that like for you?
Well, you just said it, torturous. The fact that we have to meet with you guys, that's the worst part of the experience.
Did you get any ridiculous questions that day?
Oh, my gosh. I tried to forget. They've asked so many dumb questions about what you like to eat before a game, after the game. Like, it's the Super Bowl. I mean, come on. And that's the thing about it is the media, where you have to do that, where they have all of the media people come out. And that's just a part of the what we like to call the experience. But for the most part, it's actually pretty cool because I got a chance to meet Dale Hansen, who's a big-time sportscaster here in Dallas, or was for about 30 or 40 years. And I remember as a kid watching him every Sunday night. So he was there in Atlanta. So for me and Joe Bouton, we had what we call like a little miniature fight because we grew up. He grew up in Mesquite. I grew up in Garland, right next to each other. So getting a chance to meet Dale Hansen was a dream come true for me.
Yeah, Dale Hansen. I grew up in Philadelphia. Went to school at SMU, and I thought I knew what good sports reporters were until I started watching Dale Hansen. His Sunday night sports show was you couldn't miss it. And for people who don't realize, the Tuesday media day is a day that includes a lot of media that is not necessarily even NFL media. Like, I remember that day in Atlanta, like downtown Julie Brown from MTV running around MTV, acting like she owned the place. But she, I mean, you couldn't not notice her. I mean, one, she's beautiful. Two, she's just got charisma for days. And you just, like, you could just, you just there's just a buzz around her. And she was, I eventually had to just sort of take a step back, think, okay, what am I doing here? Because you know, there's so much going on. And for me, as I was working at the Murfreesboro Daily News Journal at the time, I had to tell myself, I'm treating this like any other day. I'm working on my football stories for the week. And in fact, I tried to, for the most part, stayed away from the Eddie Georges and Steve McNairs, because trying to get questions in with them was just terrible. And I went to guys further down the roster and got some different angles to work with. But John, as you look ahead to this Sunday's game, where do you see it turning? How who do you think is the difference maker, and who wins?
I feel like, you know, one of those you pick with your head or your heart kind of deal. Like, I feel like if I break it all down on paper, that maybe the 49ers are a better all-round team. I mean, we know what kind of great weapons they have on offense. They've been a strong defense for the most part. There have been some lapses. But, you know, emotionally, I find it difficult to pick against Patrick Mahomes right now, the way he's playing. And in another big game like this, I just keep feeling like Patrick Mahomes finds a way to get things done We saw him do it at Buffalo in one of the playoff games, and one of the really the rare instances where maybe they weren't favored to win, and then up against at Baltimore as well. I think Kansas City is playing maybe its best football of the season right now. And I'm not positive that the 49ers are playing as well as the Chiefs. Their playoff games have been tighter. They've trailed, I believe, in both games. And I just have that gut feel that whatever needs to be done, Patrick Mahomes is going to do it and give the Chiefs a close victory in the Super Bowl.
Denard, what do you think is the key to this game? Who wins it?
It's hard for me to say this because Patrick Mahomes is so good, especially the bigger the stage. But to me, it's that Chiefs defense. I mean, how many times have we talked about how good that defense has been playing? I mean, they held Baltimore to, was it 10 points? And I mean, their ability to contain Lamar Jackson. So it hasn't been really that offense of the Chiefs, it's that defense that's making a lot of noise.
The Chiefs defense is, in this run they've had, this feels like the best defense that that team has had. And Patrick Mahomes is still Patrick Mahomes. And I'm with you, John. I think this, in a game like this, there's a noticeable difference between these quarterbacks. And yes, Brock Purdy is a great story as the last pick in the draft. And yes, he's accurate and he makes quick decisions. But he's not Patrick Mahomes. And I think we have to start talking about Patrick Mahomes as one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the game already. And he's relatively young to start having that conversation, but he's what, second or third all time in career playoff wins already, behind only, Tom Brady's got a long way to go to catch Tom Brady. But the Chiefs, they did not look like a Super Bowl team to me for much of the year. They sort of have gotten through it. They've made believers out of me now. So I think the Chiefs too. So now that we've all said that, everybody can go throw their money on the 49ers because that sounds like a kiss of death. But on to the Titans, because this is, of course, Believe in Titans. And as I mentioned, they have officially announced their coordinators. We talked about defensive coordinator Denard Wilson at length last week. We got into the offensive coordinator candidates a little bit. The ultimate choice is Nick Holtz, who does not have a huge coaching resume. Certainly doesn't have a lot of experience as a play caller, but he's a high school friend, a longtime friend of Coach Brian Callahan, and comes after one season as the passing game coordinator with the Jacksonville Jaguars. 39 years old. John Glennon, is this a good move? Is this an underwhelming move in your mind? What do you think?
I'm not completely sold on this being a great move. I mean, I guess maybe the first thing we have to remember is that he's not going to be the play caller anyway. Brian Callahan has already said he's going to be the play caller, so that responsibility is not on his shoulders. I feel like he's had, some decent success, but just not a lot of it. It just seems like that there was another step to be taken for Nick Holtz before he got to this level. I really like the qualifications of Eric Studisville, who was another guy that they interviewed, who had, experience at different positions in different roles. He'd been an offensive coordinator. He seemed like a guy that Brian Callahan could really lean on because of his experience and because of their shared relationship as well. And I wonder if Brian Callahan maybe sets himself up, for a little criticism here, because as you mentioned, David, these guys go way back. They were high school teammates, high school buddies. And if things don't go well for the offense, well, first of all, Brian Callahan is going to take most of the blame there because he'll be the play caller. But secondly, you're setting yourself up for a little criticism because people are going to be saying, oh, well, what do you expect when you hire your old high school buddy, who didn't have an incredible resume coming into this job? So I think maybe, you set yourself up in not the greatest position. And you set Nick Holtz up in not a great position either. When you look at what he did last year as a Jaguars passing game coordinator, Trevor Lawrence's numbers were a little bit down. The passing yardage was about the same overall. Some of the things, we talked about a little bit last week in terms of his qualifications. One thing we've all really liked about him, he was under five different head coaches in Oakland, a survivor, clearly valued by a lot of different people. And maybe on a slightly different note, the one year he was an offensive coordinator before was in college, not in the pros, as a UNLV in 2022. He took a team that was averaging about 20 points a game, 76th, or excuse me, yeah, 76th in the country, and brought them up about a touchdown in 1 year, which is pretty good considering you don't really have control of the personnel that much. So I like there are things to like about Nick Holtz. I just feel like there was maybe that one more step to be taken before becoming offensive coordinator, whether it was being the quarterback's coach for 2, 3 years, maybe in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean this is a guy who, as recently as 4 years ago, was a quality control coach. Which, if people don't know what that is, that's basically entry level coaching in the NFL. He was the quality control coach on offense for the Raiders from 2018 to 2020, and then has had a rise from there. I mean, the one thing you obviously know is that he is going to be on the same page with Brian Callahan right from the get-go. There's not going to be a learning curve there for what each other thinks or how they think or how they look at the game. They've obviously known each other a long time. But Denard, do you see this as a risky move, or does that long-standing connection make this a solid hire for Brian Callahan?
I don't think it makes a solid hire. I mean, when you look at the resume, I mean, John just pointed it out. I mean, he's only had like 1 year of really calling the plays. And think about it. He broke in what coaching in what 2007. What was interesting, it was at the University of Nebraska. And you know who the head coach was then, right?
That was Papa
Well, it was
Callahan, Bill
Papa.
Callahan,
Papa
of
was.
course, yes.
So, and what was interesting is that when you look at this hire, Brian and actually Nick, they go back to high school. They were all teammates at De La Salle High School with Maurice Jones-Drew. I know that area down in Concord, California. I used to go out there a lot because I lived in the Bay Area. And what was interesting that these two go back since high school. So a lot of times when you think about when Nick has gotten hired, it's been by somebody he knows in the Callahan family. So when you're looking at an offense that was stagnant and was kind of in and out last year because of some of the injuries, you want somebody that's really familiar with calling a game. Now, I know right now Brian's already said he's going to be the offensive coordinator. And what's interesting, David and John, I want to ask you this. Because Brian's going to take over the play calling, do you think the reason that he hired Nick in the first place is because maybe he knows the way he wants things kind of set up? Because that's what
Because
happens
that's what
with
happened.
offensive coordinator. He gets that role, but the head coach is going to end up calling the plays. He just wants him to kind of get everything set up for him, and then he'll make that call. Do you think that's why he made the hire, because of the familiarity between the two?
Yeah, I would think that has a lot to do with it, and that he can say, they'll have a meeting, what, on Tuesday morning probably, to talk about the game plan, and Brian Callahan will say, these are the things I want in, and Nick Holtz then will probably put those things in. I would think without a lot of question, a lot of discussion, or a lot of argument, in most cases, because I would assume they see things the same way. And we talked about it. Brian Callahan talked about how Zach Taylor sort of brought him along under a similar situation in Cincinnati, where Taylor was the play caller and Callahan was the offensive coordinator. So, Brian Callahan at least has a template on how this works, and he's gonna do it with a friend of his. There is an interesting little aspect to Nick Holtz, though, if you look at his playing career, such as it was when he was in high school as a high school senior. He was named De La Salle's most inspirational player, and then Then he was a walk-on at Colorado, where his claim to fame there was he was the holder for Mason Crosby for 3 years. Mason Crosby, of course, has had a long and productive career in the NFL, and he ultimately there won the Regiment Award, which goes to the Colorado player who makes the greatest contribution with the least recognition. So there, I guess there's a certain Rudy-esque aspect to Nick Holtz and in the way he inspires people around him without being front and center. So as an offensive coordinator who's not going to be calling plays, that's a personality trait I would guess that serves him particularly well if he can translate it to this role, because he will be running some meetings. He will have contact, I guess, with every member of the offense to some degree. And if he can be that same sort of inspirational and passionate guy, he can have an effect in some meaningful way. And we'll see how that plays out. Among the coaches who reportedly have been hired but have not been officially confirmed by the team yet is, again, I mentioned this at the top, a guy you know well, Dennard, Steve Jackson, who will be working with the defensive backs. Steve Jackson was a longtime cornerback with the Oilers and Titans, and in fact, in that Super Bowl season we referenced earlier, was a really interesting piece in that he was towards the back end of his career at that point, dealing with a bad knee. And correct me if I'm wrong, Denard, but my recollection is that Jeff Fisher and Greg Williams held Steve Jackson out of numerous games and sort of saved him for the really important ones, like against Jacksonville and whatnot, and other ones where they thought he could have really do something meaningful, I guess, in particular matchups. I think which speaks to just how smart a guy he is and how much you can count on him. Is that correct? Do I remember that correctly?
Steve, what happened was he was got injured a lot, kind of the back end around I'll say by 97, because I actually stepped in the absence of Steve when he got injured. And so the knack on Steve a lot of times that he would find a way to get hurt in training camp. So he would spend pretty he would always pull something in training camp and be out about 3 weeks, and then he'll finally make his way back.
Magically be ready
Yeah,
for the start of the
magically
regular
he'd
season,
heal.
huh?
But very smart, Steve. It's interesting, David. Steve actually was in Washington back in 2000. What was it? Probably around 2005, when Greg Williams was a defensive coordinator, and Greg hired him out there to be the secondary coach. So what Steve is going to bring to this secondary is he's going to bring kind of a toughness, and that's the thing about Bill. We call him Billy Ray. He'll bring a little bit of enthusiasm, and he'll bring excitement to that room. I think when you got these young corners, Christian Fulton, McCrary, Sean Murphy, Button, Caleb Farley, they're going to benefit with Steve because he played the game for 10 years, and he knows how to put guys in a situation to succeed. He's like Jerry Gray, a former player. You're not going to be robotic. He's going to do a lot of scheming. He's going to do a lot of different coverages, and he's going to bring a new element to that room. So I'm excited about this hire because you got a former player that played for a long time. So he knows how to put guys in position to succeed in this league.
John, we've talked about the issues in the secondary. We don't know if Christian Fulton is back. I would presume he's not, but a guy like Caleb Farley, who has struggled to get his footing in the NFL, is certainly going to be back. An undrafted guy like Trey Avery, who has had good moments, I would say more bad moments than good. He'll be back fighting for a roster spot again. There was the, you're going to have a new secondary sort of hierarchy with the first full season without Kevin Byard. How big a hire is this? How important, whether it was Steve Jackson or whomever it was going to be, how important a hire is this for Brian Callahan?
I think it's very important because that issue, even when the Titans defenses have been good in recent years, it seems like that the secondary has been the sore spot. Even the Titans the last few years, a decent job, pressuring the quarterback. Not great, but pretty decent. But even so, the X plays, we've talked about how often that has hurt the Titans in the last couple of years. The penalties, we saw time and time again this past year how penalties in the secondary hurt the Titans. So this is a big hire, and I'm interested too, where how Brian Callahan is going to piece this together. Now, they did see a report earlier today. Our old comrade Paul Kuharsky indicated that there's a good chance now, according to Paul, that the Titans may stick with Chris Harris in some form or fashion. So maybe Chris Harris is the secondary coach, I guess. Maybe Steve Jackson is a cornerbacks guy, I guess, if that transpires. But I'll be interested to see how that. But two things are that we should point out too regarding Steve Jackson. He worked with Denard Wilson, the new defensive coordinator, as an assistant defensive back with the Jets in 2018 and 2019. So there's a lot of familiarity there. And then Denard, excuse me, and then Steve Jackson went to Cincinnati, hired there by Zach Taylor, and was on the same staff, coaching staff, as Brian Callahan. So he already has a lot of familiarity with both the head coach and the defensive coordinator. So I think that'll help with the transition. But yeah, you're right. This is a position, cornerback especially, where we're going to see a lot of overhaul from last year. I don't think Christian Fulton will be back. I'm not sure if Caleb Farley ever plays again. So and Sean Murphy Bunting is going to be a free agent probably too. So there's going to be a lot of new faces in there. So yeah, this is going to be a key assistant for Brian Callahan.
Yeah, Denard, you referenced Jerry Gray, who of course was your defensive backs coach with the Titans, and Steve Jackson in that same secondary. And one thing that always impressed me about Jerry watching practices back in those days is that he sort of boiled things down and would tell you guys, look, if you see this look, it's going to be A or B. Don't even think about C, D, or E. His whole thing was to keep guys' minds from being cluttered so that you could, you think of one or two things and you play fast and you go that way. And I think if Steve Jackson, I don't know his approach obviously as a coach, but if you would imagine he was shaped by that to some degree, if he can bring that same sort of approach to this secondary group that has been somewhat beleaguered after this season, that would make a big difference, if you ask me, don't you think?
Yeah, because they need a change back there. There is no longer Kevin Byard to get guys set up. So Amani Hooker now is kind of taking that role, and that's something new for him. But when you look at this secondary, the way that they played the last couple of years, they've been pretty much dead last in secondary play, and that's not going to make a great defense. And the thing that you want your defensive players, especially in the back half, you're the last line of defense. But you also want to make sure that you know how to play what we call scheme. Schemes, what that is that there's probably about five plays or five formations that teams are not going to change. So somewhere on the line, you have to learn how to capitalize when you see those formations. And that's the good thing about Steve. When you are a former player, you can like pinpoint certain formations that, and you say, listen, we're going to jump that. We're going to play it like that. You saw Ed Reed make a living out of not playing technique, but he would play formations and just jump things. And that's what you want to see. I don't want to see robots, David. I mean, we've kind of tired of that. And once you can get those young guys in believing and set them up for success, I mean, listen, you don't know what can happen in that secondary room. They can take a huge leap forward.
We talked earlier in this episode about some of the absurd questions that pop up during media day at Super Bowl week. There was an absurd quote that came out this week about former Titans coach Mike Vrabel, and we discussed this last week. Mike Vrabel is not going to be a head coach. Might not be. Looks like he might not be in the NFL at all this season. But Diana Rossini of The Athletic, according to an anonymous source as a GM, told her, and I've got this in front of me because I want to make sure I got this exactly right, and I quote, He's a very large human being and can be very intimidating to people in an organization. End quote. And that is part of the reason he doesn't have a job right now, according to Diana Rossini. John Glennon, is this one of the most absurd things you've ever heard, or can there possibly be some truth to this?
I think that is it is lunacy, and I'm honestly surprised that, I mean, it's not. We should be clear. It's not Diana Rossini, as you said, herself, who is saying this. It's a comment from an anonymous GM. But to me, maybe if I'm hearing that from anonymous GM, I kind of laugh to myself and maybe cross that GM off future source list for me right there. What I think that comment really means, I think, is that the whole Vrabel package is large. It's not just a large human being physically, it's a big personality that accompanies a big person. And a guy who is, most of the time when he's in a room, he is the focus of attention. He's loud, he's confident, he has opinions. Not afraid to hurt people's feelings. So when you say a large human being, I think it's more than just the physical. I think it's the whole Mike Vrabel package that might turn some people off. But it's kind of funny too. We talk about kind of guys like this that maybe aren't as much in favor now in the NFL head coaches. But look, when things are going well with those kind of guys, it's like, boy, what a strong figure Mike Vrabel is. He's big, he's powerful, he stands up in front of us, everybody respects him. It's a great thing. And then when things aren't going so well with the same guy, it's, well, he takes up too much oxygen. He's too much about himself. So, to say that Mike Vrabel's physical stature alone is intimidating. I think that's absurd. I think we've had a lot of successful large coaches. Look at what Dan Campbell is doing right now in Detroit, for instance. I think it's more about the entire picture of Mike Vrabel, and maybe that's something that can be a little bit much for people and maybe needs to be trimmed down to size a bit more.
I was going to say, Denard, you've been in NFL buildings. There's large people everywhere, right? I mean the players are large. Some of the former players who are coaching or are scouts or are in the front office are large. If you're intimidated by simply someone's size, you don't belong in an NFL building, right?
I'm just trying to figure out who in the world would say something like
Yeah.
this, anonymous GM, and not to mention, I would like to see this general manager and see how big he is. I wonder if he's like a little guy, like 5'6" or 5'7". And let me tell you something, whoever this anonymous GM, it's the people up at the hierarchy. They're the ones that kind of create intimidations, the owners, head coaches like Mike Shanahan that are about 5'7". I tell you what, they're the ones who pull weight, not the players. I've never heard anything like that before. That's absurd.
Yeah, as I've thought about this Vrabel situation and how surprising it is to me that he didn't land a job, I'm struck by two things. One is that I think the teams that fire their coaches, we make such a big deal out of Black Monday. I get the sense that those decisions are made well in advance of Black Monday. There's not an owner who wakes up that day and says, "You know what? That wasn't the season I wanted. I'm going to fire my coach." They made their minds up weeks ago, and they probably already started the process of vetting candidates. And by the time they make the decision of who to fire somebody, they already have a pretty clear sense of who they like and who they don't like. And just look at the Titans situation, right? I mean, Brian Callahan was he came in for his first interview, and before the Titans were halfway through their round of first interviews, there were already reports that Callahan was getting a second interview. So he was clearly that guy. And I think maybe the fact that most teams didn't expect probably Mike Vrabel to be fired. No one was thinking about him, and they had already had their favorites by the time that they were actually quote unquote looking for a head coach. And then two, we've talked about it. Vrabel's not a guy who is good at hiding his emotions, right? He doesn't have a good poker face. And if he is really If he was angry and bitter about being fired, which I think he probably didn't expect it, that probably would have come across in interviews, or potentially could have come across in interviews, rather than him coming across as an enthusiastic and energetic leader, and that maybe a year off will help him regain a little of that and get him juiced up. And to that end, there have been reports now that Luke Fickell, apparently the head coach at University of Wisconsin and Mike Vrabel's best friend, has said that he figures it's almost certain that Mike Vrabel will be around that program in some capacity this fall, whether that's an advisor and an analyst. What exactly that is, we don't know yet. John, do you think being around a bunch of college kids will be good for him, or will it be most helpful to be around Luke Fickell if that's where he ends up this fall?
Yeah, I think both. One thing we should make clear, Luke Fickell is a man who is about 6'4", 260 pounds, the same as Vrabel, so he will clearly not be intimidated by Mike Vrabel, which is a good thing. But yeah, I think, some of Fickell's comments, I think it was on a radio show, I believe, when he talked about this. And one of the things he said about Vrabel, said when he talked to him on the phone, he sounded like a completely new guy. So it sounds like, as you referenced, David, I'm sure there was some period of bitterness and frustration over what was an unexpected firing. But, in time, given another week or two, maybe Mike Vrabel has gotten that out of his system, and is ready to go again. And we know this about Mike Vrabel. He's said it multiple times and illustrates it very clearly on practice fields too. He loves to teach. He is a big time teacher, and obviously you're doing a ton of that, even more so in the college ranks than you are in the NFL. And if you can do it alongside your best friend, your best man from your wedding, your college roommate, man, that sounds even better. And let's not forget either that Mike Vrabel, when he was at Ohio State, was the Big Ten recruiter of the year one year that he was there. So, certainly old stomping grounds for him, and a natural, and that might just be just what he needs, to serve. And maybe it's not even like an actual coaching position, because I'm sure he'd like to maybe leave himself a little bit of freedom for next year. But if it's like an advisory type role, that sounds to me exactly what Mike Vrabel might need for a year.
Denard, for college kids, if a NFL coach of the year from just a couple of years ago, a guy who has taken team to the NFC or to the AFC championship game, a guy who seemingly got the best of Bill Belichick in terms of gamesmanship during the field, if he shows up in your meeting room or on the practice field at Wisconsin, how much attention would he command, you think, from those youngsters?
He would get a lot of attention the same way when he started out at Ohio State. He was with linebackers coach, wasn't he, under
Under Urban Meyer there,
Urban
yes.
Meyers? Yeah. So I mean, imagine what you bring to the table for all of those young players. I mean, all of that experience. Imagine a coach like Mike Vrabel showing up and bringing all of that experience from Ohio State back in the days. I mean, one of the greatest defensive players, an All-American at Ohio State. From 90, what, 93, what, 93 to 96 with Luke Fickell on that team, that Rose Bowl team that ended up beating Arizona State. I mean, that's so much experience for a young player. And there's so much you can learn from a coach like Mike Vrabel. And you can also take the bad experiences. He's been fired. He's been at the top and the bottom.
So yeah, it seems like a sound thing if it works out that way. Of course, Madison, Wisconsin will be much colder than Nashville, Tennessee during the football season, but he'll have to deal with that. And I guess he would maybe treat it like a football season where he bounces back and forth between Nashville and Madison. I don't imagine he would relocate there full time for what looks like a temporary assignment, but we will see, and we will see how this coaching staff takes shape over the next week or so. And we'll see what happens in the Super Bowl in Las Vegas on Sunday. All of that and more Fair game for discussion next week, but that'll do it for this edition of Believe in Titans. Denard Walker, thanks as always.
Thank you.
John Glennon, thank you.
Thank you as well.
And thank you to all of you out there. We will be back next week with another edition of Believe in Titans.